You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson. Sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Good morning. This is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch. My name's Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every Sunday, I am joined by business leaders, experts, entrepreneurs all across Oxfordshire who kindly spend their time putting up with me to share their stories and to share insight into the world of business with you, the listener. And on today's show, I'm really excited about this one, actually. So we are going to be joined by David Murray Hundley, the Grumpy Entrepreneur, which is a name that may go to one side. And David is kindly going to share all of his experience of scaling businesses around being an author, non-exec, being on the board, and just general business insight, which I'm sure you're going to find really, really useful. So get your notepad, and we're going to introduce David after the song. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. As mentioned before that song, I'm really, really delighted to be joined by David today, the Grumpy Entrepreneur. So let's start. David, tell all of those that don't know you all about you and your background.
Well, firstly, thank you for having me on. And it's nice to do something that's in Oxfordshire, so, which is good since I live here. So I'm David Murray Hundley, yes, affectionately known as the Grumpy Entrepreneur, maybe not all people. And I started life as a software developer and actually did the works on the world's first B2B e-procurement system with Barclays.
Wow.
And then actually was a Commerce One in my 20s, and we IPO'd for $22 billion on NASDAQ, which was obviously nice in your mid-20s. I then also helped build the first automotive cloud called Covisint, which was with General Motors and Commerce One. And then by the age of 30, was bankrupt and lost the whole lot. And been building businesses, working alongside founders and shareholders, and that generally at the startup scale-up stage. And today I'm co-founder and CEO of a company called Pario Ventures, which is along with one of my best friends and actually my first boss at Chase Manhattan in New York when I was 21. And we have over 100 investments in our portfolio. It started off just being him and I, and it's developed over 11 years into where it is now. We've taken a bit of a change this year. We're very focused on net zero businesses in particular, around energy, automotive, mobility, and kind of the chemical industry. And I'm a dad to two daughters and wannabe sim race champion, and otherwise pretty chilled out, and wrote a few books last year as well.
Amazing. No, loads of stuff to deduce. How are we going to get all of that into an hour? Probably by me talking quickly. So definitely the most difficult question that any of our guests get asked, because you're all experts within your field, is a song choice, because it's around the world of business, isn't it? So you've kindly chosen a song for the listeners this morning. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
So it's called I Love This Bar by Toby Keith. And most people in Europe, other than a few weeks ago, probably hadn't heard of Toby Keith. He reminds me of 2012 in Vegas. Didn't like the place, but I went to his bar. He happened to be there. And I upset a few locals because I was a Brit and did some silly things in that bar. And it also reminds me of doing 60 laps around Vegas Raceway at a NASCAR bar because I was so bored, and going to watch Stewart concert. So I just thought it was quite fitting because he was a bit of a legend in country western. And one of the things I grew up on was ZZ Top, and always the videos were always quite comical, and his videos are very much like that. So that was why I made the choice.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Following that great song chosen by David and David's intro, we today are going to be sharing David's story. And there's lots and lots of things that we're going to be talking about all around the world of scaling business, his own story. And indeed bankruptcy, which was something you kindly shared there before, David. So let's just start with a really, really broad, fluffy question, if that's okay. But how is the world of business? Because I think it's very reported that we've are having recessions and the cost of living crisis, but how is business really in Britain and further across the world?
Yeah, so I think things are not as easy as they have been probably for the last 10 years, certainly even the last 2 years. That's definitely so, you know, the companies I work along with raising investment, that has definitely got harder. I think a few shareholders have been stung by businesses that have run out of runway, and just terms are tougher, and the cash is not as easy to get hold of as it was. I think in terms of trading, it's interesting. You look at luxury goods with businesses. So there's a company in Oxfordshire actually called the Little Car Company, and they've been flourishing the last couple of years. So there's still that part of the market where people are still buying. And I see hear the same about supercars, and I hear the same about houses and stuff. So there's obviously cash at that level. But I think definitely people have pulled their belts in a little bit. We would do this. I'm amazed it didn't happen in lockdown, if I'm honest. I had a little feeling it would, but actually in the M&A market in particular, they had their best year ever. So it just shows you that it kind of gets flipped on its head a little bit sometimes with not what history tells us. I think if we do hit a recession, I'd have probably a lot of business owners that are friends would go against me. I think we're due something a little bit more tougher than we're in at the moment. And it's not a bad thing because it washes out the bad companies. It sadly challenges the really good ones, but if the good ones can get through it, then they're going to flourish in the next, you know, what goes up comes down and goes back up again at some point. So I think that's how it feels at the moment. And, you know, there's definitely been a slowdown in the M&A activity, like companies being acquired. That's certainly slowed up in the last 14 months. And it's tough out there, but the good businesses always succeed, right? It's the ones that make money. It's the ones that try and aim for profit and not just raise capital to build a business, which is kind of a bit of a red herring in my world.
Absolutely. One of the things I think those listening at home right now would be really, really keen to hear about is about how to scale a business. And I appreciate that phrase. There isn't a one size fits all. It's a very, very big question. I'm sure if you could answer that in a sentence, it would be you would have queues of people. But what are the traits that you see across the board in terms of the businesses that do scale successfully, but also those businesses that are going to still be strong through challenging economic climates?
Yeah, so scaling is really hard to do. Okay, everyone throws it out there as something easy, and I think for founders and boards of businesses, they kind of get to that 40 people in their business sort of level, and they've got scaling is usually pushed by shareholders because they want to build more value onto the business. It doesn't mean it's necessarily the right thing to do all the time, and I think what I see a lot of is the foundation just not being solid enough. And there's a lot of areas. You know, I've seen a lot of companies try and scale, think it's easy, think it's going to be quicker than it is, and not realizing that, you know, losing sight of what their product is, losing sight of who their customer are and who they're, what the customer wants. And they try and make an assumption. It's a bit like a startup. So a lot get it wrong. I think there's a, can't remember the number, but there's like the UK has quite a high failure of scalable businesses. So it's not easy. It's very different for a founder. You know, you kind of have this all hands on deck flexibility when you do a startup, and then you come into the scale up world and it's a little bit more grown up. There's definitely a demand from shareholders. You know, you've probably taken investment that's from a VC firm. So they're a lot tougher than maybe, you know, individual investment coming in. And it's all about the numbers. Yeah. You know, the whole point of raising the money is to, you know, if you've got 1,000 sales, it's going to 10,000 sales and then scale from there. So it isn't easy. And I think at the moment, the current climate, I think I would probably, you always have to have a plan B on these things, but I think my plan B, if I was really being pushed to a scale up, is how do I get myself, my business to damage risk, like risk damage, like definitely cover that, and break even, you know, I've been saying it for the last 2 years to every business that I'm involved with, figure out how you break even, figure out how you cut costs back very quickly and you can still do the same quality of product. And just, you know, be ready to do that, not get yourself into a burn rate, which is probably horrific and just takes months and months to kind of recover on a business. So scaling can actually be quite damaging for businesses and the individuals involved.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because I think that business books and podcasts and Dragon's Den all teach us that to be successful in business, we need to scale and we need to have big numbers. But is there a place for a business to not scale and not necessarily grow, but still be really successful?
100%. Absolutely. And I think the organically grown businesses, I have massive respect for people who do that and haven't taken any capital on. There is nothing wrong with the boring companies. I actually quite like boring companies because they're not full of hype. They're not full of, like, you know, headlines and stuff that don't really have much substance. And, you know, I was talking to a business last week and, you know, the lady, and she's in Northern Belfast, and she built this business organically over 6 years. I mean, it's a tough struggle to get on that journey. And, you know, I'm sure she's fallen out of love with her business several times. However, she's not at the mercy of shareholders. She's not got debt. You know, she can keep those costs tight. And I think, yeah, I would definitely recommend it. You know, I always say to founders when they're raising their seed capital, their first money, and they're all excited, and they're like, yeah, you don't sort of own your business the day that money comes in, because you know it's not your business anymore. And founders struggle with that. Certainly at a scale-up stage, they feel almost alienated about their surroundings. And they do have that pressure that you talk about in the books and on TV shows that say, oh, you know, in order to scale, you've got to, you know, to scale, you'll be a massive success. And I wrote something last week, actually, on LinkedIn saying we're obsessed with the term unicorns, okay? And, you know, I always say to companies, there's only one Facebook, there's only one LinkedIn, right? It's like, just build a decent business. Yeah, how much do you really need as an exit for your shareholders? And I think founders sometimes lose sight of what their shareholders actually want in terms of return, whether it's a 5x multiple on their investment or 10 if it's, you know, massive. And they kind of get a bit carried away to be building this billion-dollar company. And that is, yeah, we saw it at Commerce One, really hard to do, like really hard. And we had a lot of money. It was still hard to do. And you that part of the scale-up stage is that, you know, founders and teams evolve. You lose board members, kind of natural change of stuff. And so I think we do listen too much to what's out there in the media. You know, Dragon's Den's for TV, right? As my wife, wife's an ex-TV producer, and she says it's all about TV. So I think there's a lot of that. And I do worry that people go, well, if I haven't achieved, I don't know, a $500 million market cap on my business, I failed. And I'm like, well, actually, you're providing jobs. And if you can cover all your costs, pay yourself, build a business organically to 20 million, you've done amazing. You've done absolutely brilliant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, really, really, really interesting points there. And it's funny the point that you say about Dragon's Den, actually, because we had Kate Bell of Zippers In, who was on Dragon's Den, and share her story with Dragon's Den. And actually the really interesting spoiler that Kate kindly shared is that the investment was decided before the show happened, which was crazy. But but anyway, sorry, Dragon's Den. One of the things that I do think would be quite interesting, nevertheless, around that insight that you shared, is really what do investors look for? And I appreciate that there isn't a one size fits all, but if you are having a business that is going to be investable, what kind of things do you need to have in place, and what kind of things would an investor look for?
So it varies at different levels, okay? So if you took seed level is very much about, can you get to market, or have you got to market? Even if I always say to companies, sell one thing, prove to me someone will buy it. Because if you do that, you're 99% better than all the other startups that never get to that point, who never get to market. They go down product rabbit holes and all the rest of it. So I think that's one thing. Track record is really important, and referenceable track record. I mean, we probably get 30, 40 decks a day from businesses, okay? And I mean, they've all made themselves out to be mega successful. And then you dig, And it's playing with words, and that immediately breaks down trust. Mm. Yeah, immediately I'm like, okay, if you're kind of spinning that, and fake it until you make it, or whatever it is, then what else are you doing? I think there's also this team. There's a bit of grey hair around, if it's a young business, grey hair around the boardroom. You know, when we did eFundamentals, which we sold to Commerce IQ over a year ago, when I started as chairman and investor in that business, you know, my board was amazing. I mean, just astonishing. In fact, I was the youngest on the board as the chairman, but they were amazing. And I remember we had Downing Capital, who invested in us in our Series A. And Richard, who was the investment director, he said to me, David, we looked at the deck and saw the board and we went, well, they're going to do it. So it didn't kind of matter. They knew that there was success there. There's people who have been through. And I think also focus. And people get focused on so many areas. And I'm like, don't do world domination. Get your local market right. Just get one part of your product out there and then do the other stuff. And I think it's a bit of humbleness. You know, there's this real thing that we teach founders that they've got to have a fake till they make it attitude and like be, you know, almost the ego is too big. It's not even confidence. And I hate that stuff because I see straight through it. And I figure as an investor, I'm going to probably be invested in that business at seed stage for at least 8 years. The whole 3 year thing's a load of rubbish, right? So I figure it's 8 years if I'm lucky. So I've got to put up with that person sort of thing as well. Because it goes good and bad. And my other thing would be is just communication. So many founders get their communications wrong. It's just, it's really bad. And the numbers, you know, Dragon's Den, actually, one thing I do like on Dragon's Den is they push on numbers, okay? And it astonishes me, probably because people are on TV, they're a bit nervous, but they don't know their numbers. I'm like, you should know your numbers daily on your business, like a project manager, treat it like a project, right? No, it's your budget, it's, you know, it's your neck on the line. So that always amazes me. And then I think valuation, I saw one yesterday and I literally laughed on the call, which is probably not very pleasant, but I'm just like, you're going to waste 6 months trying to raise money and never do it and not figure out like why. And it's that's the first stumbling block. And listen, you know, don't, some of the best founders I've met, young and old, who have been successful, value people's time. And you can tell from moment one, they value people's time. They don't expect freebies on everything. And they listen. You know, even if they're good at something, they listen to what they're not good at and they grow that way.
No, absolutely. Some really, really interesting points there that, really keen to build on. So thank you for that. We'll continue the conversation after this.
Interviewing Oxfordshire's business leaders. This is the Business Brunch podcast, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. And today I'm really, really delighted to be joined by David Murray Hundley, who's kindly a local entrepreneur who's agreed to come on the show to share some insight and some interesting views into the world of business. So thank you for that, David. But before that song, you were kindly sharing what an investor might look for. And I think one of the big pieces that came out of that was about really kind of their personality and that they want to listen and that they want to absorb information. But you also touched on, in terms of an investor pack, in terms of having that strong board and that expertise. And that's really interesting, isn't it? Because I think that one of the big traits that we've seen across this show, and one of the big traits often you see in entrepreneurs, is not wanting to hire people better than them. But there's the well-known phrase that you should hire people better than you. What's your take on that piece?
It's an interesting one at the startup scale. So I think at startup stage, there are the founders that I see successful are the ones who go, I don't know everything and I need real help on this journey. All right. Mm-hmm. And I have an argument about that as well, which maybe we'll talk about later, because I don't think they necessarily do it correct at the right time. But there is definitely that. I think what I see at scale up stage is founders, if it's been going well, they go through founders' ego moment, which I did myself on businesses, right? So I'm speaking from experience, where you believe your own hype. and you believe you think, oh, I'm doing amazing, because other founders tell you you're doing amazing, and you tell them they're doing amazing, right, in a networking event. And it happens all the time. It doesn't matter what age over. So I think that happens. There is definitely, I do see people holding back on the hiring because they think they've got it sorted. So I think one of the things I would say on scale up is you have to let go, right? You can't do everything, right? And, you know, there's also an argument that people have bootstrapped maybe to a certain point. And, you know, I worked with a company called The Bunch years ago, and, you know, he was a student and he bootstrapped to the point where you just can't bootstrap anymore, and you have to take on, you have to grow up as a business and take investment, and you have to get your advisory board and that. And I think there's one of the differences is, like, people get advisory mixed up with board members. So your board's there for governance, right? Your board's there to do the tick in the boxes that the business is doing what it said should it do. Advisors should be a safe haven for founders. Simple as, they shouldn't be at a board meeting. They should be at their own meeting with you as a founder, as a group. And you should probably have two subjects a month that you just want to clarify. Maybe you're doing the right thing as a founder and you want their feedback and their experience. And then you can take that to the board for approval. And a lot of companies get that wrong. I've been to board meetings and they've had advisors in there. I'm like, why? It's like two different things, man. So I think there's a lot of that, but there is some founders who are, they also don't know when to let go. I've met some founders that have got to that scale up stage and gone, if I stay as the CEO, founder of this business, I'm going to cause it a problem to grow. Mm-hmm. And they've moved title, they've moved to another C role, or they've left the business altogether. And I have massive respect for those people, because that you really must know your limitations if you're doing that, and you're doing it for your shareholders. The ones who don't, you gradually find it just ends up messy at some point, without doubt.
Absolutely. I think now would be a really good time to talk about hiring in that board support, that advisory support, and when to do it and how to do it. I know that you're a non-exec to a number of businesses as well. Like, what is the role of a non-exec? And when is a non-exec right for a business? And what other form of board advisory support can you get? How do you tie that all together? A big question. Sorry, David.
Yeah, I mean, let me start with the advisory side. So there's a lot of advisors out there. You just have to go on LinkedIn and put the term in, and oh my God, everyone is an advisor to a business. And I meet some good ones, and a bit like project managers, I meet a lot of bad ones as well. For me, advisors, I had someone make a comment last week that in 30-minute phone call with me, I put them straight on so many areas. Okay. And they said, like, my advisors don't do that. So I said, well, fire your advisors. And I think there is a lot of textbook advisors. There's some very good ones. I would definitely say, unless they have built a business or have solved maybe a technology issue that you particularly had, or even come from your industry, then they're probably not the right person. Yeah. I also, I see a lot of advisory boards that are names and titles and, oh, look, they worked at these places, but they're often very, I call them fashion parade advisors. And then we have, there is those advisors that you just naturally bond with. Yeah. So, Kevin, who's now my friend for 30 years, whilst he was my boss, he also mentored me and advised me on loads of stuff early on. And, that bond is strong. So I like to think that mentors and advisors, they might not stay involved with your business particularly long, but they will probably be around you for the long term, because they will have recognized the talent in you and gone, this person's going to do something and I want to be part of their journey, whether it's this business or another business. Advisory boards shouldn't stay static. When I see board advisors and advisory boards, that have been on businesses for like over 2 years, I question it, because I'm like, business has changed, so your needs have changed. So I find that unusual. I've taken advisory roles on and said, yeah, I'll be here a year. And they've ended up trying to keep me, but it's like a comfort blanket. And I'm like, no, I've done my bit. Like, I'm done, sort of thing. The non-exec stuff is, it's a really weird one, because there's a vagueness behind whether you're still formally a director of the business and you're guiding that business in the view of Companies House, right? But it's all to do with EIS and all the rest of it. So they're interesting. I see a lot of boards. I've been chairman now for the last 10 years on businesses. And board governance is appalling on scale-ups and startups. It's appalling, right? So that's why I go into the board governance. And the other one is to make a balance on the board, because what you don't want is a board full of investors. So what a lot of founders do early on, they get it wrong, and they allow investors to become board members. And as soon as an investor is, you know, as soon as someone becomes an investor, what do they care about? They care about their investment predominantly, right? Certainly they're from a fund. So I see a lot of boards that are way in the wrong way. There isn't an equal balance. So you'll have like 70% of the board members are investment directors. And you're like, whoa, like they're just dealing with that alone as a founder. Is a nightmare. So you try and balance it up, and you also try and have people that, you know, they've got a track record of boards as well, and they've dealt with the growth pains. And, you know, and I can say this, but you know, when I look back at eFundamentals, I was really proud of everyone on that board. They were just all very unique people. You know, one had run Sony PlayStation for a mere like for 10 years. Like the guy, yeah, they were immense people. But one of the things was, it doesn't always go good. So I remember, I think 2 years before we sold the business and exited, we almost went bust because we didn't raise some money. We had a burn rate. We weren't hitting sales. And I still remember the phone call where we all sat on it and we were going, next week, we're trading insolvent. And that's a big, you know, you need big boy pants for those kind of conversations. And, you know, we pulled together and I felt we all put our hands in our pockets to make sure the staff got paid in case it did happen. But that is experience. That is an experienced board of people who aren't non-execs as well. You know, they have to be careful how much they're involved with the business, but you get through those problems. So I always joke that, you know, 2 years before we sold, we were going bust. And so there's a lot of that. And I generally think recruiters aren't the best, no disrespect, by the way. I think some recruiters are not great at identifying what the great outline is for some non-execs. They just kind of go very high level. And I see it from phone calls. I'm just like, oh, God. A lot of it is, you know, word of mouth. People come across you. And, you know, there are those times when, you know, when I was chairman for eFundamentals, that was because I did a talk in London. And John Maltman, who was the founder, was at the back of the room listening to my talk. And there we are. We're on a whole journey together. We're very up and downs. The bunch chairman, because I saved Elliot from making a really bad mistake with his business, and you build trust, right? So, you know, I would say a lot of the businesses I've been involved with, it's been because I have a word of mouth and people have said, well, David's good, he's straightforward. And I think, you know, generally they are some of the better talent around.
No, absolutely. No, really, good insight. Thanks so much for your thoughts on that. Let's have a song and then we'll continue the conversation after this.
The Business Brunch Podcast with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
I hope you enjoyed that song, and I hope you're, more importantly, enjoying the conversation with David. I know I certainly am. It's really, really, really insightful. So thank you for that, David. I'm just keen to continue on the conversation, because I think one of the things that you kindly shared in your intro is that real early success you had and then took the knock and then come back. And I think a real trait of successful people, whether you look at Elon Musk right at the top or not, is really pushing and then having a knock and then coming back. Why do you think that is? And talk about your journey and really kind of how you were feeling at the time and how you did reinvent yourself and go again.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think you have to be, I mean this in the nicest way, you have to be slightly unhinged to be an entrepreneur in some ways, because you don't pay yourself and you put up all this stuff. I mean, my story, which I didn't share, you know, I was sleeping rough at the age of 18. And, wow. And if you can come back from that after, and it wasn't like some people long term, it was a couple of months, but you know, that is probably the lowest I ever felt that I could get. And you know, and then, you know, at 18 and then 21, I'm living in New York. I mean, it's, and then Monaco at the age of 24 and San Francisco. So it just shows you, like, you know, within less than 10 years. And I managed to, I guess I blagged my way, quite a way on the journey, definitely, the early stuff, which I admitted to everybody at one point. But yeah, when the bankruptcy, I mean, the bankruptcy was my fault. I mean, Commerce One went Chapter 11, so we went from 22 billion to basically zero by the early zeros. Yeah, and I went personally bankrupt here in the UK. And yeah, it was a bit like being living rough again. But yeah, at least I had a roof over my head and I had some tools, but I lost absolutely everything. And when you've done it once, you kind of start learning what works, you know. And I wish at 29, 30, when I went bust, that I had the experience that I have now, because like, it wouldn't have happened and I would have done so many other things differently, which is frustrating. And yeah, I think you don't take no for an answer. You know, I'm quite stubborn. Even now, I'm still pretty stubborn. Like, I like to think I generally like people more than I used to like people, but I'm very, very stubborn. And I will, you know, I don't see anything as any barriers. Like, I've never seen barriers. Like, there's always a solution to everything. You know, when I've run my own businesses, I've said to people, don't come to me with problems, come to me with solutions, because you might be right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so I very much believe in that. And I think my own personal thing has been, it's worse for someone else. Yeah. I was chatting to a friend who had cancer a few years ago, and I was talking to him about when he was going through treatment. And he said he didn't enjoy some of the treatment, but he said, you know what, David, I figured that someone was probably coming back from some war zone or something with a lot worse things going on. That got me through. And he's right. And I, even when I, you know, I've never felt sorry for myself. I've never taken, you know, bankruptcy. I did go to the pub afterwards, granted, but with some friends. But yeah, like, you just gotta get on with it. And and you know, I teach my kids and stuff, you know, and my risk on the world is probably very different to what it was in my 20s and 30s, because I was an older dad. But you know, you've got to keep going, and you have to. And I think I also realized, you know, I lost parents very young as well, and hence I ended up sleeping rough. And I learned very, very early on that no one's going to do it for you. And when they do, when it's people like Kevin, who's, you know, my co-founder friend, and some other people that I'm eternally grateful to, it's amazing. But you don't expect it. You just don't expect help along the way. You just go, it's me, myself, and I. And as I always say, when I got married, I was an island, population one. I was quite happy. And then my wife built a causeway and moved into my island. And then my children took it over. Made me just a member of it. So yeah, really resilience. And I think, you know, it's not, you know, I'm going to say this as well, that, you know, if I look at, none of us are indestructible. I had a particularly hard year last year, mental health wise, which I'm more than open to admit. And it was bad. It got really bad at one point. And so I took about 6 months off. But, you know, we need to be nicer to ourselves. And we need to realize that a lot of the stuff you see in the media is all BS. It's just a facade, right? And there is this real hype, fake it stuff. And, you know, we're human beings. And, you know, I'm trying to employ that into shareholders and people involved in businesses and going, like, you know, you can't just say that you care about how they are health-wise. You actually have to do something about it. Because resilience is, you know, it wears out after a bit, and you need to kind of recharge yourself and come back and be, oh, I'm all right now, sort of thing as well.
No, absolutely. It's really interesting, isn't it, about what society teaches us, as you touched on in the media, what is successful. So an old school friend of mine set up his own business a couple of years ago, and he was telling me, he was like, Ben, honestly, I'm really, really buzzing. He was like, I made 40 grand last year. And a lot of people would look at that and say,
awesome.
40 grand for a business, like, that's really small. But he went on to say that his business costs are almost nothing, and he's got young children, and actually he probably worked the average of about 20-25 hours a week.
Yeah.
So he earned exactly the same salary as he was earning in his full-time job, but actually off doing 20 yeah. hours a week and doing
and
the school
happy.
Run. And fair play to him, you know,
yeah.
as you touched on, happy. So it really is a big takeaway, isn't it? That
yeah.
actually it's about thinking that health does come first, and think about what's right for you, not...
Yeah, what... I think we get hooked up on lots of zeros as an exit. I spoke to someone similar, actually, a couple of weeks ago, and she kind of quietly said to me what her quarterly turnover was. And I went, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I said, because anyone who questions it, ask them if they've done it. Yeah. Right? So that's always my view. Like, have you done it? No, shut up. And so And so it's that, and it's that balance as well. Yeah. And I have that, your friend, I have massive respect for that, because I think, you know, I'm the same. I did the school run this morning and got absolutely soaked, but I
every cloud.
Yeah. Love my parents can do it. So I did, you know, they missed out on that, and I'm not going to miss out on that. And I think it's really important. And I think, you know, success is not material things. You know, I learned that in my 20s. You know, yeah, I bought a Ferrari and lived in Monaco and partied like crazy. Probably the most miserable I've ever been in my life, if I'm honest. And had no idea how to manage funds at all. I mean, I was appalling at it, as it probably showed, because I went bankrupt. But I think, success means different to different people. And I think the problem is, when you get investment, success has to be, for most shareholders, an exit, right? And I think that's the pressure. And they do want their money back. And they do want the next multiple. And I think that's where I would say to founders, think very hard about taking that money. Because, you know, your friend could probably take an injection of cash and grow the business even more, and maybe spend 10 hours a week working on it and having someone else work on it. But he's then got the pressure of shareholders. And they go, well, when do I get my money back? Sort of thing. So I think people need to think really carefully about that. And success can be a 40 grand turnover business, a million. That's what I was saying earlier. We get hooked up on this. It has to be $500 million. It has to be 22 billion, etc. They're rare. I mean, they're super rare. And they come with their own big problems as well.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. No, really, really good. Really, really good points there. We are really going through this hour, aren't we? With some great, great insights. So thank you for that. I think the bit that I'm keen to sort of build on more, which I think would be really, really useful, is really around kind of what your journey looks like now. So I know that you touched on, you know, you do the school run, you work with lots of different businesses, investors, but also your books as well, which I think would be keen to build on. So what does your world look like now? And what do you see as your future?
It's an interesting one. I hit 50 this year, right? And I was saying to Kevin this morning, I said, God, we've known each other 30 years. How old do I feel? And he's older than me. So when he listens to this, he'll be like, shut up, David. Yeah, what does my world look like? So I'm really fortunate. I get to spend a lot of time with my children. It's really important to me. You know, as someone who parents couldn't because of financial reasons, and also obviously, you know, they went fairly early, it's really super important for me. In fact, that's probably my priority, if I'm honest. You know, Pario is important to me because it's Kevin and I, and, you know, I love him like a brother, and it's fun. I enjoy doing stuff with Kevin. I've been looking around and doing a few more non-exec roles. In fact, I've got a conversation coming up about a new chair role in the mobility space. And I'm kind of at the point of going, I just don't want to deal with idiots. So, which is the grumpy bit. So I'm being very, very, very selective, very selective. And, you know, I jumped, you know, an hour ago, I was on the race simulator, racing around a track, you know, because I love that. That's my happy space. That and running, couldn't run today, but, you know, that and running is my happy space. And then, yeah, the books, you know, the books is, it's been kind of boredom in a way to come keep my brain ticking over. But the book we released in October, 50,000 copies. Like, I didn't think anyone would buy it. So 50,000 copies. There's a scaled-up version coming out shortly. And, I'm really lucky. Like, you know, tomorrow afternoon, probably about 2:30, I'll pop to the pub, see my mates, because I like having conversations that isn't about startup and scale-ups and just about normal stuff, which is nice. And future, I don't think I can ever retire. I tried doing that. Doesn't really work for me. I have to be active. And I think I'll be that 80-year-old chairman that'll be in a wheelchair and I will be on stage and go, here he is, our 80-year-old chairman. Because I just think I get bored. And I have to do stuff because I really want to do it. And I think last year, when I talked about having a break, the reason I took a break and I shut myself off from everybody other than very close friends is that sometimes you just need a break to see whether you want to do it, carry on doing these things. So I had a long thought process near the end, didn't bother myself with it through the start of the process, and I decided I do enjoy it, and I do enjoy seeing people successful and businesses successful and look, you know, and looking after shareholders. So it hasn't gone completely. I'd find it very hard to go into a day job. I'm too maverick, and I haven't actually worked in an office 5 days a week since I was about 22. So, yeah, sort of know what I do in life.
No, good stuff. Good stuff. We are coming towards the end of the show, but one of the things that I do like to do with our guests, which I think you've given a lot of already, so apologies. But what would be really good is if you could give, I guess, a takeaway tip for those listening today, or maybe a couple, because I think one of the things you said earlier that I didn't question you on, which I thought was really good, is that actually if you were to give that 22, 23, 24-year-old version of you some advice, it would have been a different outcome. So what would have been your advice then to you, and what would be your takeaway tip for those Oxfordshire business people listening right now?
Yeah, so I would say be humble. I think the moment, hopefully you've got someone around you that when you do believe your own hype, they ground you. Okay, because I think if you stay grounded, you've got a great opportunity. When you're not grounded, you lose good people around businesses because it sparks through the business and it creates a culture issue. And sometimes people just go, I just don't want to work for that founder because he's a bit of an idiot. Mm-hmm. Or she's a bit of an idiot. I think there is, do things with your business governance wise because it's the right thing to do. So I'm a big advocate for females in business in general. Okay. And in fact, I wrote an article this week about female founders who get a challenge when they're thinking about having a family and investors hate it. Right. So I think, embrace that, but do it because it's the right reason to do things within your business, not because everyone thinks it looks good on the website, which I've had done to me on businesses and it drives me nuts. I think also, you can't call yourself an entrepreneur until you've given the return to your shareholders. So all these entrepreneurs, I'm like, well, what return have you done for shareholders? And they haven't done it. Like, yeah, you know, that's no good. Valuation isn't everything. Valuation, you can't buy a beer with valuation. It's a great quote from Kevin Doyle. And you can't. And I think, people get hooked up on it. If you're going to be successful with your business, you'll build that value to the right, the right percentage it needs to be. And you'll make your money and you'll make shareholders money. Don't outprice yourself in the market or down round and just get hooked up on it as success, because raising money is not success. And I think stay close to your friends. One of my regrets in my 20s, apart from a lot of bad things, is I actually don't think I was a particularly nice person to be around on a personal front. And so I've apologized to lots of people since then. But, I think be humble to them and value people. I didn't listen enough. I wish I'd listened a bit more to the advice I was getting from people who actually knew what they're talking about. I wish I'd valued people a lot more through the process. People like Kevin, I did, but there's other people I go, wow, I could have been a bit more, forthcoming with some gratitude towards them as well. And enjoy it. Okay. If you don't enjoy it, you're going to fall out of love with it at some point because it's going to push you to the max. And don't use the fail quickly thing as a, oh, look at me, I failed quickly. The whole failing quickly is decide very quickly if your product's working. If it's not working, then back up. Don't keep burning money on it just because it's, oh, well, I had a go. I can now go and write a LinkedIn post about how hard I tried and blah, blah, market fit and all that rubbish, because it's just like, oh, it's insulting. Be careful, as I said at one of the conversations, you take investment, it's a different ball game. It really, really is. Pick your investors wisely, because there are some investors that are real pains in the neck.
Amazing. Well, what a way to end the show. So thank you so much for joining me, David. If you are just tuning in now, I definitely recommend listening back to the show, but also going and following David, as you've really shared some great insights, so thank you for that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So just a reminder, thank you, David Murray Hundley, the grumpy entrepreneur, for joining me on the Business Brunch here on Get Radio today. But we will be back next week with some brand new guests. And next week, we are going to be talking about the process of taking a traditional business online. And to do that, we're joined by Katie Elmer of Huddle Furniture and Alex Tucker of Lex Marquis Hire. So it will be sure to be an interesting one. Just a reminder, you can listen to this show every Sunday on the radio, online at 11 o'clock, or you can listen to the podcast format, which is available on all your favourite podcast platforms and released on the Monday morning. And do look out for the video format, which goes out on the Get Radio Facebook page and the website every Tuesday. But for now, whatever you're doing this Sunday, and I think on the basis of the conversation with David, enjoy some time with your family, and I'll see you next week.